Junot Diaz's first novel, The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 2008. He visited us again in September to talk about his latest book, which is a collection of stories called This Is How You Lose Her. The reviews were glowing, with the Wall Street Journal calling him America's best living short story writer. And then he received a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant in October. My conversations with Junot Diaz have always been lively, so it's not surprising to hear how this one started as soon as I introduced him. Now, you're standing. Should we talk about that for just a moment?
Oh, God, no.
But you've had some problems with your back?
Oh, man, it's just the wages of youthful sin. I think being a runner for too long and delivering pool tables to get myself through college in the end ended up kind of doing stuff to my back.
Mm. Well, let's talk about your work. Your first book was a collection of stories, Drowned. Then you wrote the novel, and now you have another collection of stories. Are you always writing stories while you're working on a novel?
No. What ends up happening, especially with both of these the kind of bookend books, Drowned and This Is How You Lose Her, is that I had this kind of overarching idea for a book. And I was like, okay, I wanted to write a book about the rise and fall of a cheater, namely Junior. And then I spent the next 16 years finding the stories that would fit to make this larger project work.
So this is unlike what you did earlier. Your story, Wildwood, appeared first in The New Yorker and later became a chapter in Oscar Wilde. You're not going to use any of these stories in a future novel?
Oh, no. This book is complete. I feel like this book is my halfway point between a classic story anthology where none of the stories connect and a novel.
Yeah, well, these stories are linked. And even the ones that aren't obviously linked, if you read up on your life, you realize that all of these stories are linked in some way. And, of course, they're linked in one way or another to Junior, who also appeared in Oscar Wilde and Drowned. You've said that he is what your family and friends, or Junior is what your family and friends call you. So are you inviting the inevitable autobiographical question by doing that?
Yeah, I think there's an inevitable autobiographical question anyway. And so part of what I sort of am attempting to do is, especially with this kind of guy, is it's kind of like a game of doppelganger of imposter. He wears my clothes, uses my CV, runs around with my credit cards, pretends that he went to my college, but nothing reveals an imposter more than that they live or pretend to be you in a close environment. So, sure, people jump to that conclusion, but I'm really clear, and my friends and family are really clear how different this guy is.
Well, for example, Junior has a brother, Rafa, who dies of cancer as a young man, and people would assume that that happened to your brother.
Well, my brother certainly had cancer.
But he didn't die.
He didn't die, and he was also a completely different cancer patient. I mean, my brother was very compassionate, very scared, you know, and a real tough little fighter. He was a kid at the time, and Junior's brother is a nightmare. He is like almost satanic when he gets cancer.
Well, Junior can be something of a screw-up, especially when it comes to the way he deals with the women in his life. Would he be as interesting if he, to put it nicely, had more self-discipline?
Woof. I mean, I don't think Junior's problem is self-discipline.
Well, he knows that what he's doing will have negative consequences, but he does them anyway.
Yeah, I think that he's just deeply, deeply conflicted. I mean, I think that that's what interests me as a character, interests me, draws me to him, is that in many ways he's aware of the cracks that run through his soul, but he hasn't been able to put together what he needs to put together to sort of be a better human being. And him wrestling with his sort of cracks is what makes him, I think, interesting.
A review in The Economist says, quote, "Straightforward writing about male lust is rare. Writing that reveals the price exacted by such lust is rarer still." And then they go on to call you a master of this self-flagellating and surprisingly tender art.
Well, at least I'm a master of something. My God, yeah.
But why do you think it's so difficult to write about this subject?
Don't you think that it's been – don't you ever as a male find it unusual that representations of male subjectivities, whether we're talking about TV, movies, or books – are so completely unrealistic? When me and my boys get together and we talk about books that we've read, we talk about movies, none of the male characters, none of the male realities correspond to anything we've experienced. I just think that male subjectivities, even though boys control the universe, they have all this privilege, patriarchy, who men are inside is still a mystery. And so therefore, writing about these men, for me, I think opens a door for a lot of people. It's uncomfortable, but I think it's interesting.
Who men are inside, what men are inside is a mystery for women or for the men as well?
I think, first of all, for the larger culture. I think, again, show me a representation of a masculine subjectivity that the average 12-year-old boy would recognize. I don't think they would recognize him. And I certainly think that many boys are not encouraged to look inward. I mean, Junior's problem isn't just that he's a screw-up, that he has these kind of these shadows, but that he also looks inward, unlike all his male friends, and it torments him.
And he knows that what he's doing is going to cause trouble. He still does it.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
he says things that are almost guaranteed to get a negative response, and then they get the negative response. And he wonders, why the heck did I do that?
He's very honest. I mean, if you follow Junior, you know that he's honest about the world. And so a lot of times he will say things that doesn't help his deceptive cause.
Well, Junior writes, I'm not a bad guy, but his girlfriend disagrees.
I thought that was the classic moment of self-pitying obfuscation. You know, the opening of the book certainly does not. That's not the Junior at the end of the book.
My guest is Junot Diaz, also known as Junior. His latest collection of short stories is This Is How You Lose Her. In the first story, The Sun, the Moon, the Stars, Junior says that his ex-girlfriend considers him to be a typical Dominican man, a sucio. First of all, what's a sucio?
A dude who cheats.
And you seem to be saying in these stories that infidelity is something of a given in that community, but not really talked about honestly, and at least not by men.
Well, no, I see. I think what I'm trying to do, in fact, is use local weather condition to talk about planetary climate.
Well, in one of the stories, when men reveal that they're Dominican, women run out the door.
Yeah, which, of course, if you think about it, that's just a way to talk about masculinity. I just think that Dominican men, the generalizations and stereotypes about them make explicit certain practices of men that, as a writer, I just was drawn to. I guess what I'm trying to say is that if we're trying to say that Dominican men are any worse than American men, well, I would love to get all the women of America assembled and see what grade they give American men, get Dominican women assembled and see what grade they give Dominican men, and I bet you both groups will get an F.
The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde encompassed a lot of Dominican history, but these stories are more intimate. They're about relationships between men and women, and as the title suggests and what we've just been saying, mostly involve infidelity. So infidelity is the subject that you were thinking about most when you're writing these stories?
Intimacy. Because we have a story where, for example, we have Miss Laura, which is not a story about intimacy. It's about a kid having a relationship. It's about an underage adolescent having a relationship with a woman in her 30s. We have a story... you know, we have stories in here which have more to do, and I think what connects all these stories, the stories about cheating, the stories about kind of illicit love, is about a character wrestling with what is required for you to be able to sustain intimacy, the honesty that's required, and your ability to tolerate yourself vulnerable. And I think these are all in these pieces.
The last time you were here was before you won the Pulitzer Prize. Has the award changed your life much?
Well, I mean, yeah, in the sense that, of course, it's put my books in the hands of people who would have never put it in. I get invited to conferences I never would have been invited to. But, you know, that's sort of important, and I'm, like, incredibly grateful for it. On the other hand, you know, I'm still the guy who takes 10, 12 years to write a book. I still have to sit down and write the darn book. It's like once the applause dies down, I'm left with me in a room. And that hasn't changed.
Well, you say 10, 12 years. In fact, the last time you were here, you said it was going to take you about 10 years, but it's been 5 years.
Ah, see, except I started writing this book 16 years ago. That's the problem. It's like it's only an accident that it came out 5 years after Oscar. This book is 16 years in the making.
Did the Pulitzer make you something of a spokesperson for the Dominican American community? Writers tell me often, just simply because they are Chicano or Chinese American or whatever, people immediately assume that they can speak for everybody who comes out of the same community.
Yeah, it's sort of a large leap of the imaginary. It's sort of like getting your average white writer and turning around and say, well, you could speak for all whiteness. Yeah, I mean, for me, no. I'm an artist, first and foremost, but I'm an artist of Dominican descent. I'm an immigrant. There's the issues that I'm interested in, that I'm involved in, that I will speak, make interventions on. But I don't think of myself as representing or speaking for any community. That would be an incredibly difficult claim. I'll leave that to our moronic politicians.
Several of these stories were written in the second person, which many writers consider to be a difficult voice to write in. Why do you like to use it?
Just in this case, I needed it because it provided a certain kind of distance for the characters. It provided a kind of a chilling effect. I mean, sometimes you need to cool a story down. Sometimes you need to create some distance between the reader and the piece.
And when you use Spanglish, are you doing something similar?
No, I think that this is part of that kind of Melville-esque, you know, sort of push to sort of represent the incredible fecundity of American languages, that incredible diversity, the polyglot nature of our experiment called America.
In one sentence, you begin with the word guapissima and end with pulchritude.
Mm.
And you assume that people will know that they both have the same meaning?
Well, I would assume that Melville would approve. And I think that that's always a good guiding light, you know? If old Melville would like it, I'm good.
So is he your guiding light?
One of many. But certainly he's one of my strongest. When I think of my heavyweights, I think of Melville, I think of Toni Morrison, I think of Maxine Hunkinson, people who could, like, knock buildings over.
One of the stories is narrated by a woman, Yasmin, a Dominican woman living in the United States and involved with a married man whose wife is back in the DR. Why did you want to include a story about infidelity told from a woman's point of view?
This one is, again, I was being too clever by half. This is a story, of course, for the big grad student nerds who have all my work and have to read it 12 times. The man that Yasmin's with is Junior's father, Ramon. The woman back home in the Dominican Republic is Junior's mother, Rita. This is the other woman. And for me, I guess part of what I was doing here, again, too clever by far, too obscured. This is Junior, the writer, imagining for the first time in a human way the other woman.
But isn't that what writers do? You try to understand what another... I mean, that's why people write about serial killers. They don't have to become serial killers to write about them.
No, I agree. But all of us have a place we don't like to look. And for someone like Junior, who in many ways was broken by his father's infidelity, for him to imagine in a very humane way the woman who his father ran off with or tried to run off with, I think was a great challenge.
The last story in the book is called The Cheater's Guide to Love. I'm sure many of our listeners will have read it in The New Yorker. It covers several years in the life of a writer teaching in the Boston area. And I'm assuming it's relatively autobiographical because you've been teaching at MIT for several years now. In the story, you write about how racist a city Boston is. Doesn't it have a reputation for being very liberal because it's a university town?
Well, it's the heart of darkness. Don't you remember that Marlowe, the universal genius, was considered incredibly liberal and enlightened? And at the end of his report on native customs, he writes, exterminate all the brutes. Mm. I don't think there's any connection between liberality and enlightenment, and that doesn't keep us from being misogynist or racist.
And Junior, who's teaching at a Boston university, is always getting stopped by the police, presumably for racial reasons. People stop their cars and yell at him. Has that happened to you?
Well, listen, I mean, what I think is great about this kind of gag is that as a writer, I've kind of been bashing New Jersey and the Dominican Republic all the time. But for some reason, if you bash Boston, there's something about Boston that brings out, like, people get just anxious about that. I could say Jersey's racist for 3 books, but I said Boston's racist, suddenly I'm doing something new. But has it happened? It's happened to me in all 3 of my beloved spaces. It's happened to me in Santo Domingo, happened to me in New Jersey, and it certainly happened to be in Boston. And it just was a great gag for Junior because he's so paranoid and hurt at that moment.
The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde was optioned for the movies. Is that in production?
Oh, God, no. I think with the economic collapse, nobody's in a rush to do a movie about Dominican nerds in New Jersey.
In addition to winning the Pulitzer Prize in 2008, aren't you now also on the Pulitzer board?
I am. I'm one of the 17 votes. Yeah. So it's sort of an interesting place to be.
Well, now you understand the process. Does that affect the way you think about your own Pulitzer Prize?
Oh, no. I lay in bed in a cold sweat. But for the grace of God, you know, it's like, I can't believe that you make it through. It's kind of like blowing up the Death Star minus the force. It's that difficult.
Now, you said that it takes you at least a decade to write a book. Are you writing any faster than you used to? Because there's another novel in the works, isn't there? I heard you were writing a science fiction novel.
I do. I have a novel in the works, and God knows when it's going to finish. It's simply this kind of apocalyptic, end-of-the-world, giant monsters eat Haiti and the Dominican Republic novel.
They eat Haiti and the Dominican Republic?
Yes, they eat the two countries.
do they find one side more nourishing than the other? Oh, don't answer
that question. Terrible.
His book is This Is How You Lose Her. It is published by Riverhead Books. And you said the novel's in the works, but what does that mean? When am I going to be seeing you again?
That means I'll probably have to roll in here in a wheelchair 20 years from now and be like, Leonard, I finished.
Well, let's hope that your back is in better shape.
Yeah, it will be. Thank you.
What are you doing on the tour? Are you just doing all of your interviews standing up?
Yeah, and, you know, I'll lay down when I can.
Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you so much, Leonard.